found out that this was organization that I was interested in and shared the same values as I had. So it was kind of an organic thing where I encountered you guys in the wild, and then over time I became a fan of the station.
This is Fiercely Independent, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.
Thing is you don't know what stories they're going to tell. And if that company has their hands in many different companies, if they can use your likeness, it can be for many things. So I didn't want to be in a computer fighting these like digital gangs that I'm in, but I'm excited for AI. I'm excited for how they're going to combine our identity attributes and create like entirely new industries and people. It's exciting for me, but I think we have to get a consent infrastructure built in there.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, a union town.
Good morning. It's the 5 o'clock hour in Los Angeles, and welcome to another working week. You're listening to KPFK's Working Voices, and it's spring fun drive time again. I'm your host this morning, Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr, filling in for Joe Ayala. And that means I get the opportunity to introduce the latest member of our Working Voices team from CWA San Fernando Valley, Marissa Remsky. Welcome to the team.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And in this morning's show, Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory talks to SAG-AFTRA member Justin Hofstad to discuss AI. Steve Zeltzer's Labor Media brings us a Teamsters May Day leadership discussion. And Reggie Wong has War and Peace with Pat Alviso of Military Families Speak Out. All this and more coming up this morning on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
In our first offering this morning, our executive producer, Dan McCrory, sits down with SAG-AFTRA member Justin Hofstad to discuss the ramifications AI brings to the entertainment industry and the national media.
Working class hero is something to be here. This is Dan McCrory with Working Voices talking to Justin Hofstad. And Justin, you have an official title?
My name is Justin Hofstad. I'm a proud SAG-AFTRA member. I'm an identity attribute activist and a founder of a consent verification infrastructure.
So I hear you're on the bargaining team for this AI stuff.
I'm talking to the bargaining team. I've been in cahoots with the AI policy team. Oh. And I was speaking with a negotiator yesterday. So I'm in their ears as much as I can be.
How'd that conversation yesterday go?
It was a little frightening, to be honest. The game is closing up quickly. There were proposals to be done in like November. My proposal personally wasn't functional until February. And they've been shortening the windows with their negotiating with AMPTP. That was supposed to start in June, and then they moved it to April 27th, and they're just shortening as much as they can, and they're putting the boot, so to speak, on the negotiating committee, because they don't want to strike. None of us want to strike. We don't feel like we can survive another strike. So they have a lot of leverage, and so they're really pushing these negotiations. From what I've been told, as much of a voice in these negotiations. They don't even know. It took me a long time to get in even talking to them. Like, they don't even know where the emails are going in there. The internal structure of what is happening in the AI economy with the entertainment industry it's a messy, messy business.
Who's at the table exactly?
We're talking about Screen Actors Guild and then AMPTP, which is the Alliance of Motion and Television Producers. I mean, if you want to talk, there was also, the Writers Guild, they just finished their negotiations, but when I talk about the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, those are like major studios, streaming platforms, Disney, Warner Brothers, Netflix, Amazon, Apple, Paramount, Sony, Universal. Okay. Those are who we're up against.
You said Actors Guild, Little Actors. You said SAG-AFTRA is not really adding to the conversation. And more, it's more of a reactive stance.
They very much are. I mean, yeah, they have a lot of members to take care of, and we're all begging for jobs. The Writers Guild, particularly, they had a health fund that was empty, you know, and so they knew that they could stretch that, because what are your members going to do without their health insurance? You know, we don't have any jobs. These studios have the jobs. I mean, they're the employers. We're the workers. So, yeah, it's very much strong-armed as far as I'm concerned.
Is there anybody within the AMTP, PTP, that's sort of driving the conversation, like a particular studio?
I couldn't point at anybody directly. I wish I knew, but I could tell you that their hands are much more affiliated with giant corporations than I ever assumed before stepping in. They're connected to C2PA, which is the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, right? And without bogging you down, this is like, these are huge corporations. It's a conglomerate, right? Of Adobe, we got Google, Meta, Sony in there, Microsoft, Intel, OpenAI, Tupic, Amazon, BBC, all these things, and like 5,990 other companies. These people are shaping what AMPTP is doing, because they have a fiduciary responsibility to their stakeholders. So they want, this is a bigger thing than just in SAG. This is how identity is being governed in the digital world. And it has far bigger implications.
Let's say you have the ear of the SAG-AFTRA's bargaining committee. What would you tell them?
I mean, that's kind of what I was doing yesterday is, I mean, God, where do I start? First of all, pushing the negotiating window from 3 years to 4 years is, I mean, you saw it in my post, is insane. AI is escalating monthly, not yearly. Things you decide now are going to be non-existent in 2 years. Who knows? We can get sci-fi with it, because that's the age we're living in. Yeah. What really scares me is the opt-in, opt-out situation. And it's a tentative agreement. They haven't put it out, so I can't attack their exact verbiage, which could happen right now or tomorrow or the next day. But wait. There is what I need to be told, and what I was telling to the representative I was talking to yesterday, is an opt-out, opt-in situation for AI training will be the death certificate of our industry, and I think many, many other industries. So this opt-in, opt-out culture has already happened, and they negotiated it in the last negotiations. But this is what they're building, and I know this from the inside, because I am in the standards community of how identity is being shaped within the standards community. Is the only way that they can do it right now is you opt in to AI training or you opt out. That choice has to happen. But I don't think what they anticipated is that if you don't opt in, you lose your job. And opting in, there's 3 points to it, is there's no scope, there's no duration, and there's no revocability. So if you opt into these body scans, they own you, all of you, in perpetuity, and they can tell whatever story they want to tell. You know, I wanted to tell a Marvel story. I didn't want to tell some like political agenda. So back to the point, I would tell the negotiator that if you agree to opt in, opt out, that's the end of our era, because they're going to scrape and train us, and they're going to replace us. And this is going to be a model for other industries, bigger industries.
Let me play devil's advocate here.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't this actually prolong your career, because you can always look this good for the next 20 years?
Wouldn't that be awesome if I had any control over my likeness? Yeah, sure. I'll be on screen, which a lot of people sign up for. The thing is you don't know what stories they're going to tell. And if that company has their hands in many different companies, you know, if they can use your likeness, it can be for many things. So I didn't want to be in a computer fighting these like digital gangs that I'm in, but here I am trying to get control of my likeness. If I had control, if I had scope, duration, revocability, I would say yes. I'm excited for AI. I'm excited for how they're going to combine our identity attributes and create like entirely new industries and people. It's exciting for me, but I think we have to get a consent infrastructure built in there, because the opt-in, opt-out provenance infrastructure that's being pitched by C2PA It's going to take our industry, and as far as I'm concerned, any industry. If you have an observable skill, you can be ingested by AI and you can be replaced. That goes down to the plumber as much as the actor.
Well, currently, under the Trump administration, they seem to be rolling out the welcome wagon for corporations to take charge on this, and they're buying right into it. So how do we stop that? A freight train coming full speed.
Man, it's a huge concern because regulators, we need them, right? Yeah. I don't think the U.S., at least under the Trump administration, will be on the forefront of making those moves. U.K., they're defining performer rights, as they say that. I say that in quotes, but they're trying to boil it down to the individual. But they're also being given the runaround by these corporations. Spain, Gattaca, they're trying to create digital identities. There are movements out there, but man, regulations take forever. And I'm in conversations with them. I'm in conversations with UK AI policy teams, the heads of it, who are trying to do this. But there's also, like, it's a new thing within our creative industry. I talk to these guys and they want to change the world for the better by giving the creator control. Like the Providence infrastructure, they call it like a nutrition label of the creator, when it was, and it follows the data everywhere, right? But the problem is that the creator who gets the control of this is the studio. It is the corporations. When I said to this AI policy team member in the UK, who's very much, he's trying, an activist for musicians particularly. And when I said, so an asset, you give the creator control of the asset, right? I was like, well, what about the people in the asset? I come from film. And he was cross-eyed. He's like, what are you talking about? I was like, the people that are being robbed are the identities within the asset. They're my face, my voice, my body, my emotional output. And this is a new thought because, I mean, they're coming from EFTs and Providence infrastructure came from like rare art, right? It's like you follow these tags and we can stop this. So when they're trying to solve this problem as regulators, they're actually giving power to the corporations. Trump's administration wants corporate control of assets. That's money. That's money in the bank. That's good business. And business is booming. And this is why they're extending this window to 4 years. They want to mine as much data as they can and create as many data centers as they can because they're all competing. Who has the biggest data center of the internet to create the most authentic output? So U.S. is going to be far behind. There are regulators, Colorado, you guys, California, who I just, right before you messaged me, I got a message from someone in California. I've been messaging senators left and right. It's hard to get in everybody's ear, and that is a slow process. These negotiations, this can happen before the regulations happen.
Is there anybody you're working with on a day-to-day basis to tackle this problem?
Well, I have some lawyers that have been like finger wagging me. So I'm doing my best here, Dan, to keep it in control. But there are people. I have a hopeful, there's hope. There is a system that could work out for us, but it's vast.
Are you talking to any other unions besides your own?
I tried to beat WGA to it. I couldn't get in their ears, unfortunately. I mean, there's still progress to be done. I read there. Are you part of the Writers Guild?
No.
WGA, okay. Their AI policy has some huge losses that if they can use any of your material in-house and not pay you for it, so they can create derivatives. And if they give it away to a third party, so another company for free, they don't have to pay the writers. So really, if they give it to a sister company, they don't have to pay the writers for anything. And all this is post-ingestion, meaning after it's input in the AI. So once it's in there, that's irreversible, man. There could be thousands of derivatives of your writing that's gone. There's just no way of stopping it. I have a system that's pre-ingestion. I am working with some companies, and there's a lot of voice actors that are really on the forefront of this. Yeah, I believe there's a system out there. What I want to pitch, if I had the right now, what I'm pitching to these regulators is that we incentivize individuality. Like what I'm scared of is, you know, they'll move past the entertainment industry and they'll begin ingesting our skills and anything that the corporate monster can feed on, right? So every attribute that you have, that makes you valuable. The AI economy made our identity a raw material. The way you text your mom, the way you move your cursor on the screen, all these things. And so if we had a live, revocable system that followed your identity attributes, an audit trail, and that when it was getting ingested, a commercial pathway direct to the person, I feel like we could build an economy where a new economy where your individuality is your currency. All right. So like, if you think you don't have value, anything that you do has value. If you, when the way you go on the subway, I know you guys drive, the way you go to the grocery store, like some people have panic attacks when they go to the grocery store, right? If you're comfortable with that, that skill is beneficial for AI training. And on the other hand, the people that have panic attacks, that skill could be great for like a risk assessment algorithm. You know, these, the way, who you are, your individuality, this is all ingestible by AI. And it could, I feel like if it was compensable, and we got paid for those, that could be maybe a shift or a transition, rather than what I'm scared of is after they take our jobs, and there's no income, meaning no economy, that they come in, these giant corporations, C2PA, they come in with universal basic income or a stipend or tokens. And then the people that created our demise are in control of the remedy. And then we're under their boot. We're under their thumb. I come from the country. I'm from Wyoming. I think of it like those old mining towns. Like they own your house. They own the food, the grocery store. And you're just, you're living to work, which they would love. So I think we need a major transition and incentivize our individuality, because what about the next generation? If we do that, if our skills, we might be the last generation where our skills are being ingested by AI. The generation under us, what are they going to do? What are they looking for in the future? If we incentivize individuality, I think that it'll become monetary for them to expand their uniqueness and individuality and find new ways for AI to scrape them. That isn't what they're doing right now. We got to get rid of this scrape and train for free. Corporations are, it's a highway robbery right now. It's wild.
Yeah. It's the Wild West all over again. Have you talked to anybody at the FL-CIO? Because Liz Schuler, president of the FL-CIO, came out about a week ago with a statement on AI. It's on their website. You go take a look. Because, yeah, the way we're going to solve this is not individually, but together on behalf of individuality. Because you nailed it. And that's where the conversation has to start.
Yeah, the conversation's happening right now in these negotiations, I think. I mean, if anybody, please give me that information. If anybody wants to reach out to me, because I'm in the trenches and I do need help, but you can email me or find me on LinkedIn, Justin Hofstad, H-O-F for Frank, S for Sam, T for Todd, A for Adam, D for Delta. And I mean, extend a hand because the talks are happening now.
Yeah.
And,
my union is the National Writers Union. We've already come out against AI, but it's such a Luddite way of looking at things. It's not going to have any mileage to it.
I mean, it all influences each other. I mean, every point of view, we have to come together because this is where it's going, you know? Yeah. And we have to find a way to, I mean, we should have an opt-out situation where we don't lose our jobs because of it, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, if there are different variables to how you consent to your identity being used in AI or how you interact with the AI economy, that should be malleable. Consent has to be malleable. If it's static, that's a problem with Providence. It's a static declaration right at creation that says yes or no. Consent has to be live and malleable. You can change it. You can say yes. You can say no. You can say yes to that scope. Yes, I want to be in that political agenda. No, I don't want to be in that political agenda. We have to have control of how our voices and our skills and identity attributes are being used.
I talked to Asner about this early on, and he was thrilled with it because he saw his physical form deteriorating as he got older, and he wanted to still be a player.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's the windows it's going to open is exciting. We grew up on these sci-fi films, but we also grew up on these dystopic films. You know, we don't know which way we're going to go, like Terminator or Star Trek or Star Wars. I feel like I'm like against the Death Star right now, yeah. You know, and this is our way in. Fixing these negotiations is that way into the Death Star, you know.
So what we can do is to support you is to get in touch and start talking about maybe a coalition.
100%. I think it starts here with SAG because we're a model, but get in touch with me at my LinkedIn with my name. You can follow me on Instagram. And there are groups of people, but we haven't all come together, and we really have to. Our voices right now, states are doing their own separate regulations. You know, as a country, we're very divided on this. But I mean, internationally, big ideas are happening, and we need to start talking to each other because this is a global movement. Like, this is a global transition, you know?
Yeah.
So yes, talk, please contact me in any way that you can help. I'm fighting the good fight.
In the meantime, how do you think negotiations are going? Are working people going to win in this one the way it's currently designed? Or are we selling our souls?
Man, I mean, I grew up doing construction, okay? I'm worried about all the way down to the farmer, all the way down to the construction worker. I think the negotiations are very trickily being strong-armed by these corporations. You know, it's a David and Goliath story. And every person being ingested right now is David, and these corporations are Goliath. How negotiations are going are difficult. We need to assemble more, and they have a lot of power, and they have a lot of lawyers, and they have a lot of lobbying. We need to come together and recognize what the economy could become if we allow this provenance infrastructure to be implemented. Reach out to our regulators and make sure that we find this consent verification. This is what I've built. This is my solution to it. I've become this infrastructure creator of a consent verification that creates a live audit trail that could create a commercial pathway directly to the individual. And that's what I got. If there are other ones that can solve this, please let me meet you. Let's team up. Let's figure it out.
Yeah. I would love to see your, what is it, software?
No, it's not software. It's an infrastructure. They hate that word in the patent office, apparently. Oh. It's an infrastructure. It's like the Visa of identity. You know, I'm a neutral infrastructure. I'm not the enforcer, but it's embedding a responder into any of your likeness data, which is anything observable, anything catchable. This video right here, It embeds your consent into it, and it follows it through the world and flags when it's being misused or not. It contains scope, duration. You can revocability. You can revoke it. On a mad scale, we're getting ready to move towards scale and looking at VCs. And I'm pitching it here to SAG right now, because if we could implement it into the SAG ecosystem and show that this works on a big scale with likeness, just face, voice, and body, then we could move. We could move outward. Now that the infrastructure is built, we need to keep pushing on the negotiations and not settle right now, so that us as an army of individuals and creatives that don't want to give power to the studios and want to give it to the individual, and that's going to separate some people from the pack, go into the final round of this negotiation with different gloves, you know?
Oh, they're boxing gloves.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Justin. I'm going to stop this right now.
Thank you so much. Thanks for giving me a voice. A working class hero with something to
be here. That was our Working Voices executive producer, Dan McCrory, in a conversation about the dangers facing entertainment industry workers in the face of a growing dependence on artificial intelligence. For more from our guest, Justin Hofstad, you can find him on his Digital Double Technologies website at ddt-pro.com. And for more info on SAG-AFTRA, you can go to their website at sagaftra.org. 90.7 KPFK, Los
Angeles. So it's that time of year again. I'm Hal Lohr, your associate producer for Working Voices here at listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. And we are in our fun drive. But before we begin, I have to tell you, being here at KPFK can be a humbling experience. I mean, these airwaves have carried the voices of Noam Chomsky, Lena Horne, Nelson Mandela, Betty Davis, Fidel Castro, Dick Gregory, Bettina Aptheker, Joan Baez, and that list just goes on and on and on. And here's a guy like me broadcasting on those same public airwaves that carried their voices, asking you to support the same station that carries that spirit. Public airwaves that are threatened today by both a federal administration shamelessly working to silence all voices of opposition and a spineless for-profit U.S. media that has become so completely subverted by corporate interests and fears of federal reprisal that they've become little more than cringy propaganda outlets for a grossly out-of-touch two-party federal system. But that's not KPFK. And facing an uncertain future, independent broadcast media and the otherwise unheard voices it brings you are more important now than ever. So we need your support. Go online at kpfk.org or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735. And if you haven't already, please become a member of our Sustainer Circle and join the KPFK family by donating what you can to this iconic LA radio station. And maybe just as important for those ready to resist America's actions here in Los Angeles, we need you to help us by becoming an activist and spread the word about KPFK. Remind your friends that for the last 65 years, KPFK 90.7 FM Radio Los Angeles has been LA's voice of resistance to America's corporate media echo chamber, a listener-supported radio station that doesn't have to answer to any federal government or corporate master. Dedicated to the truth and broadcast over the most powerful FM transmitter in the western United States. And with Los Angeles being the epicenter of federal crackdowns on everything from immigration to electric cars, think about how critical free and independent public radio for Southern California just might be. So please, go online at kpfk.org and donate now. A little pocket change to help us keep KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles on the air. And thank you for listening and for your support for this show.
Next up, in keeping with our Working Voices May Day review, our own Reggie Wong interviewed Pat Alviso of Military Families Speak Out at a May Day event last week in Long Beach about how war affects the working class and their families.
Hi, this is Reggie Wong with this Working Voices update, and I'm here with, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Pat Alviso with Military Families Speak Out, and I am a person that has a loved one in the military since 9/11. As a military families, as an organization, has families that have a loved one in the military since 9/11, like me. We support the troops, we want them home now, and we work hard to take care of them every day. And right now, we are here at the May Day Festival.
And what does May Day mean to you?
So my son served 30 years, and it was, of course, during the wars, the forever wars, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so over the years, you know, it was very personal to me, of course, because I didn't want my son to enlist to begin with. And then when the wars broke out, I was, like, totally waking up. And I know that's a trite word, but that's what it needed for me to realize this thing is really huge. And it's not just me being the only single person speaking out that has a son in the military. I actually thought it was wrong to speak out against the military when they're, because that's what they always tell us, you got to support the troops. So when I became aware of things being so wrong, it was after my son got, sad to say, after my son got deployed, and then I started meeting so many other military families, and then I became even more aware of the fact that this war is costing us so much. I was standing here with a sign at May Day to say that we can't afford another war. We mean that in a humanitarian way, but we also mean that in many ways that people here on May Day can connect with, because we know the $30 billion that this government, that this administration is going to ask for to fund the war very soon is going to be taking money away from the workers and the people here at home. That's why people are struggling to pay their bills. This is why, and this is why people are suffering with homelessness and so many other things that are going on with society. Our schools are just begging for food and all and supplies, and so many things are needed for the people. So we know you can connect the dots very clearly when you see how much money, $50 billion at least, they're going to be spending on this war. And that's just the financial cost, money taken away from all the people here. The humanitarian cost is just hard to even explain and fathom. It was horrible at the forever wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, that we, so many innocent civilians, over 7,000 U.S. citizens and over a million innocent civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan were killed in a war for what? And here we go, deja vu, all over again with Iran. So we're here to try to stop that. There should not be any more wars of aggression. Iran was never a threat to us. So we are standing tall with other military family members and other veterans. We actually went to D.C. about 2 weeks ago, and we all got, 67 veterans got arrested, all of us together, and military families, so that we could get their attention. The people that run this government, we actually were asking Mike Johnson to come accept responsibility for this war, because Congress will not stand up. We know every time those War Powers Act that are those War Power Acts that are brought before Congress, we always fail by one or two votes because all the Republicans are standing together to support Trump. And so this war will continue until they vote for a War Powers Act. Congress has 60 days to step up, which they haven't, to either approve this war or by law, according to the War Powers Act, Trump needs to send all of our troops home. So far, they have not said that. The only thing we heard is that Pete Hegseth has said that, well, the clock for those 60 days stopped now that we have a ceasefire. And that's not true. But if it is, if they want to go by that line, then let's say, if they ever do any more bombing, which they looks like they will, that's what they're talking about, our troops are being gathered up to be deployed again, then the clock will start again. And guess what? The deadline has happened. Now is the time that we can find the president guilty of illegal wars and war crimes, because Congress needs to approve these wars 60 days after they start. And he has not gotten Congress to do that.
Thank you for connecting the dots on like how war can affect labor. I'm just wondering, have you heard of what is the morale like right now among the military about regarding the Iran, you know, what's going on in Iran?
All of us knows that this is a deeply unpopular war. Trump himself is unpopular, but the war is even more unpopular. It's like 80% of the people have no idea why this war is happening. And if you think about it, when they keep changing the mission, neither do they. And our troops aren't stupid. They're out there stuck in these bases out in the Middle East, some of them getting fired on by drones and just with no defense almost and not being fed adequately. And as you've seen all the pictures, they don't care about our troops. And so what's happening is you're seeing this, I mean, we see it at all sorts of levels at home. And I don't know a single veteran, honestly, that think this war is a good idea. There's no off-ramp for it either. They don't have any kind of solution. They just keep escalating and escalating, all looking to me like they're trying to get some kind of win. There is no win in war, only losers. And many people are going to die if we don't bring them home now.
And how would a group like Military Families Speak Out, how does that kind of like coexist or just kind of relate to the labor movement?
So many of us, of course, just like veterans, are working families. And I think maybe you've heard of the poverty draft. Many of the people that join the military do so for an income. Maybe they want to get out of their houses in a bad situation. The recruiters are offering them big bonuses of $30,000, $50,000. Of course, they never get that, but they are offered that. And it's a way out for working class people. And of course, we've been hearing about stories of recruiters still trying to prey on immigrants. which is crazy. I mean, they're arresting him and kidnapping him, but they're also recruiting him from the military so they can deport him like they did. They have been doing with veterans. So we are working class people. We have loved ones in the military, and we believe that many of us believe that we are being exploited for that reason. And so the administration just sees us as tools. And when they're done with us, they don't care if they're starving out there in the Middle East. When they're done with us, they're going to throw us away. And we know that. So we are working class people, and we will stand up for the rights of all workers, including our military, that are, by the way, paid, if you count the hours, they're paid below minimum wage. Right now we're out, and we have Kavi, one of our veterans, standing in front of a recruiting station, and she's informing people that are interested in enlisting, young men and women, that, hey, how much are you going to get paid an hour? Less than if you work at Starbucks.
Any events or anything that the public can participate in to learn more about Military Families Speak Out, to learn more about the issues, and to perhaps show solidarity with military families?
We are begging everybody to pay attention to what's going on in this war, because pretty soon the government or the military is going to ask us to approve a funding bill, and it's going to be billions of dollars. No matter what War Powers Act gets passed or not passed, if these $30 billion at least dollars are approved, then it's a done deal. That war is going to continue. So that's our campaign right now with Military Families Speak Out, is to stop the funding, because funding this war is killing our troops. It's not supporting them. This money, yes, they're getting a 7% increase. That's done with the idea of, if they can pass this bill, then they're going to, it's the same as approving the war, and it can continue for as long as they want. And we already saw how long those forever wars lasted, and what do we get from it? Nothing. People killed, same situation going on in Iran and Afghanistan, maybe worse in some ways. So we know that same thing's going to happen in Iran. This is not about whether we like the regime in Iran or not. It's not about that, but we should not be killing people. You cannot bomb and kill people to liberate them. Our actions coming up include campaigns to stop the funding of any wars, for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And also, we are in the process now, we have found military families who have a loved one over there, and they're speaking out how they don't, and they know their loved one doesn't want this war. So if you have a loved one in the military since 9/11, or are a veteran interested in joining the work that we're doing, and there's going to be another big mass movement going on pretty soon, please call us. You can reach us at mfso.org, which stands for Military Families Speak Out.org.
Oh, and anything, are you doing anything on Memorial Day?
Oh, yes. I can't even wait for this. Rachel and the good people from San Pedro Neighbors for Peace and Justice every year go in front of the USS Iowa, and we bring students and ourselves, and we go down and we support the huge militarization that goes on during what they call Fleet Week. But the San Pedro Neighbors for Peace and Justice flip it to what it should be, Peace Week. And what they do is 5 days, 3 to 5 days of actions to let people stop and think about the huge amount of people that are visiting this giant war machine going on in San Pedro when the military comes out in their streets and their dress uniforms. These sailors are looking all gorgeous and everything, and everybody's looking at them, but they're not thinking about how this war machine and how these sailors are promoting enlistment and joining the military, making it sound all patriotic. San Pedro Neighbors for Peace and Justice say peace is patriotic. So come join us during that week. We ourselves will be there, military families, veterans, speaking out about the true cost of war. And we will also be there. That is going to take place on Memorial Day.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Reggie Wong speaking with Pat Alviso from Military Families Speak Out. For more information on Military Families Speak Out, you can go to mfso.org. And for more information on anti-war events like LA Harbor Peace Week, you can go to codepink.org.
Once again, I'm Hal Orr, your associate producer for Working Voices. And before we end this morning's Working Voices show, We need to remind you again that it's Fun Drive time on listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. We need to remind you that KPFK has, if nothing else, stood for peace and truth with the ideals of people power as an expression of peaceful unity and strength in the face of violence and oppression. And we here at Working Voices, of course, share in those ideals as Power to the People echoes through Workers of the World Unite, and the democratic safety and numbers of a society is reflected in the unity and solidarity of unionized people everywhere. So I have to say, it is a little surprising that even when government funding was available for public radio, KPFK's Working Voices was still the only union-based broadcast show on the air. Which is why, at this time, it is critical that you pick up your phone and call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Or better yet, go online at kpfk.org and donate to keep Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. And KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and particularly this Working Voices program, need to ask for some support from those very unions, associations, and organizations that this station and this Working Voices program have dedicated themselves to representing. Let's face it, KPFK's Working Voices has stood strong in solidarity with working people and the unions that represent them. And now we're asking if those unions, associations, and organizations can find a way to stand in solidarity with the hardworking people that bring you this program. So once again, you can contact KPFK at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. And they'll be happy to direct you on helping us keep listener-supported KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and this Working Voices program on the air. Who else other than KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles would even consider allowing a program like Working Voices to walk that broadcast picket line in solidarity with working people on the radio? So please, go to kpfk.org and do what you can to keep listener-supported radio like KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles on the airwaves, independent and free. This is Working Voices.
KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles.
In our last segment this morning, Steve Zeltzer of LaborMedia.net brings us an excerpt from the latest May Day Teamsters leadership discussion on the extinction of their jobs, autonomous vehicles, torture on the jobs with AI infrared cameras, and wars spending trillions of dollars and a massive rise in gas prices.
No work, no school, no shopping in the store. We're the heartbeat of the city and we're wanting more. Feel us in the face of the billionaire class. Face first, the forwards in the mass.
Tools make you a member, actions make you a teamster. Stand tall, stay bold, don't let them mistreat you.
This is Steve Zeltzer with Workweek, and today we're going to be talking about May Day 2026, and we have some Teamster brothers on who are involved in a struggle to make the Teamsters Union, build the Teamsters Union to a fighting union that defends the rank and file. So joining us today is Richard Hooker Jr. He's president of Philadelphia Teamsters Local 623, or he's secretary treasurer of Teamsters Local 623. We have Eric Johnson from Local 190 and Jeffrey Shenfield Feld from Teamsters Local 767. Welcome to our show today. First of all, what's happened, Richard? Did you have a May Day in Philadelphia, and what happened there?
Because May Day is very important, especially to workers and union workers, whether you know non-union, whatever the case may be. We all know what happened back in 18. It was 1886, and you know, the importance of the 8-hour day, and that benefited all workers. And so we started off with just reminding our stewards the importance and the sacrifice of what happened during that day. People died, people sacrificed for us to have these protections. And so we started off with that, and then we had some training, seminars, and then we went down to City Hall for May Day in March and rallied with our other labor siblings. And it was jam packed, and it was good to see everybody coming together for one common goal. And that's to stand up for one another, support one another, and let the ruling Epstein class know that we're just not going to take it lying down. We're going to mobilize, we're going to organize, and we're going to march in the street.
And absolutely, this whole issue of uniting the labor movement, the attacks that workers are facing in all directions, attack on government workers, attack on Medicare, the union busting NLRB, they're putting in billionaires in charge of OSHA, union busters from Amazon and UPS, yeah. I mean, are in charge of government agencies to protect health and safety. What do you think about that?
This is what happens when you align yourself with a anti-labor Capitol Hill White House. This is what happens. You get those kinds of things. And unfortunately, you know, this is where we're at. You know, like you say, how can someone who has been responsible for, you know, workplace safety and the horrendous record of this brother, of the gentleman who is in charge of OSHA, you know, working at UPS and Amazon, and now has one of the highest positions in OSHA, being in charge of workplace safety. But again, that's what happens when you elect people who don't care about workers.
And one of the issues that faces workers is AI, and particularly truck drivers. Millions of truck drivers are facing these forward-facing cameras. It's causing cataracts, tumors. Eric, you've been fighting over this issue because you yourself have been tortured with these cameras. And I want to say that to all workers. You shouldn't go to work to be tortured. But,
right.
But Teamsters and you and workers and union members are actually being tortured by this AI. And this is now the guy that's in charge of OSHA, who's in charge of UPS. You went to the president, Sean O'Brien, to ask him to do something, the health and safety department, the technology department. Is anyone home?
Yeah. No, they're not. He's got better bad ideas. You know, he wants to sit down with people like Alan Karp instead of sitting down with people like me and looking at 400 people that have had serious issues with these cameras, everything from tumors removed from their side of their face like I have, or other people that have had lost their livelihood because they have retinal damage now in just one eye. And guess which one it is? The one closest to the camera in each case. So, you know, you keep on breaking bread with people like Alan Karp. Think that you're so great because you're getting a seat at the table. But Sean, newsflash, it's the kids' table. And they're using you as a useful puppet and an idiot to soften the blow of this billionaire class. So if you warm up to them, we should warm up to them too. Nah, dude, you need to come and talk to all the people in the working class and find out our issues so we could band together to stop this stuff.
And this other idea that we can be on our own, you know, Teamsters by Teamsters, that you don't need to unite the labor movement. You don't need to bring all workers together. I mean, Richard, where does that theory come from? I mean, isn't the power of the working class to unite all working people together? Like, that's one of the things Ron Kerry did.
Yeah, I don't know where this Teamsters versus everybody comes from. I don't know if it's because of his dealings with, you know, the Epstein class and, you know, them kind of, I guess, pushing him, you know, to be that way. But like you said, Steve, you know, one of my heroes, Fred Hampton, he said, anywhere there's people, there's power. And you need people. And the union does not survive without its members. And if you talk about, you know, trying to isolate yourself from the group, then you're going to be weak and you're not going to win. Then we're going to lose. So when we talk about Teamsters versus everybody, well, what's going to happen to the SEIU or AFSCME or the AFL-CIO or the IBEW? The ILWU and, you know, all these other unions who, you know, are under attack. Are we just going to sit in the sidelines and don't help them and vice versa? Because that's the issue that we're going to be facing because, you know, tomorrow, well, today is them, but tomorrow is going to be us. And if we don't stand together, then there will be no us. And then we're going to be, you know, really at the mercy of the Epstein class. And we don't need that because right now we already pretty much at their mercy now. And I don't get that. That's the wrong message, especially during this time. It has to be Teamsters with everybody versus the Epstein ruling class. That's what it should be. That's what our message should be moving forward. And look what happened down in Louisiana. I saw all these other people, union leaders, talk about, you know, this voter suppression bill, that what they're trying to do down in Louisiana. Where was the cry from the Teamsters? Where was the cry?
That's resegregation. They want to go back to the Confederacy.
There you go. There you go.
They want to go back to the Confederacy. They believe those were the good old days, and we should get back to them in this country. Slave conditions.
Yeah.
Yes, they believe that that's better for us. How do you fight a system? And that's what we're up against.
Yep.
A system that is bringing in AI in every industry. How do you fight that? You can't fight it just one company, just one
company.
It's a system problem, because we as a working class have to unite together. We're not going to be able to do it. This little group here, that little group there, you can't fight a system. And that's exactly what it is.
Nope. Right. No, you need people. You need organization. You need structure. You need unity. You need solidarity. Like this Amazon thing, you know, it's every union is going to have to fight Amazon together. Not one union is going to beat Amazon. Amazon is, they're just too big, too much money, and, you know.
It's an octopus. Well, that's where, I think in the 30s, the general strikes in Minneapolis that the Teamsters led, the general strike in San Francisco that the Longshore led, those strikes allowed hundreds of thousands and millions of workers to join unions. Bosses were afraid to retaliate against workers after those general strikes, because the workers would come together collectively and says, you're not going to fire somebody for joining a union.
Right.
You were going to have a contract. And they were successful in the Bay Area. Hundreds of thousands of workers joined unions. That's why we commemorate the San Francisco general strike. It affected the entire working class. It strengthened all workers. And now I think the other aspect of what's happening is the rise of fascism and the threat that Trump is going to have martial law. And he knows, you know, that he can't afford an election. I mean, it could be a landslide against the Republicans. So he may try to impose martial law, you know, and bring in the military. That's what he's openly talking about. He can't afford an election. What is labor going to do?
That's a good question. What does labor do when this guy tries to stop the midterms from happening? What do we do? You know, do we still go to work? Do we still just bow our heads and just hope that nothing happens to us? What do we do? That's a question for every labor leader, every union member, and non-union person. Because it's not just a union thing. This is a working class thing. This is every worker has to be a part of this solution. And I agree. What happens if he tries to do that? Do we just say, oh, well, that's just Trump? or do we do something about it?
Just like the Voting Rights Act recently. That took a hit, right? You know, I mean, that's not a positive thing for us. And it's just more of the same. It really is. I just want to, can I just say something on the side? When we were talking about it before about OSHA, I had to bring it up. Remember the 2024 proposal from OSHA? Well, you know, about if temperatures get above 80 degrees, well, guess what? Trump has that stalled now. Okay. So the heat isn't as important on workers now, all of a sudden. That's a huge problem because people are dying. Right.
But don't worry, Jeff. It's all going to be fine because you have Governor Abbott, who Sean O'Brien and the Teamsters went ahead and endorsed. And this guy wants to take away the 10-minute break in extreme temperatures to get a sip of water, just like Ron DeSantis wants to do down in Florida, two of the hottest places on earth. And these guys want to take away the OSHA rights to actually get water to people that are in construction, agriculture and delivery in these hot trucks. It's just appalling. But you know, there is examples out there, and strikes do work, because just in that last port strike, I had a note written down here, $442 million lost in the GDP in 3 days of just the port strike that just happened recently with the longshoremen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that sends a message. And how fast did they cave when those guys shut down the port and gave them everything they wanted just about? They had one of the largest increases ever, while Sean was too weak to take us out on a strike.
Well, the problem is the companies, the different companies see that, hey, we're going to look, they're doing fake picketing, but they're not going to actually picket. They're not going to actually go on strike. So they don't take us seriously. And it's a problem. It's a problem. It's like crying wolf. No, oh, nothing. We're good. We'll work this out and the members will get screwed from it. That's what's happening. There's no way around it.
But I mean, how does a union leader do that? How does he turn around and support a guy that's against everybody in the working class by not wanting to afford him a drink of water every 4 hours, a 10-minute water break?
People will die.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they won't even care.
Yeah. I mean, we've had in our local people die.
Because you can't get a drink of water? That's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And these employers should be prosecuted.
Yeah.
Because they're killing their workers. That's what they're doing. We just had Workers' Memorial Day on the 28th. And you had workers testifying that their companies, Pfizer and Apple and their companies were basically doing things to destroy them. Destroy them. And to have a health and safety workplace.
Yep. Yep.
This is like a human right. A worker right.
Human right. Yep. Yep.
It's a human right. So I think that's kind of what we have to talk about. May Day and link up with our brothers and sisters around the world in Canada, Mexico, every country of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They face the same people. These techno-fascists are in every country of the world, and they're using their technology to target people all over. Spy on people and target people.
Yep. We got to go on the offensive, not just being defensive all the time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, but you need workers. You need workers. You need our members to fight back, no matter who's in leadership. If the workers are not behind them, if the workers are not doing what we need to do, if they're not organized and mobilized, then it won't matter who it is. The members have to be ready to go. They have to be willing. They have to be engaged. They have to be empowered. Right now, we're not there, and we have to be there. We can get there. But like you said, we gotta change the system that we're in right now. We gotta change it.
Okay, well, I want to thank all of you for joining us. Let's close out with that.
No school, no shopping in the store. We're the heartbeat of the city, and we're wanting more. Fearless in the face of the billionaire class. Face first, go forward to the mass. Tools make you a member, actions make you a teamster. Stand tall, stay bold, don't let them mistreat you.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net.
That's our show for this week. And really, it should come as no surprise that during this fund drive, we're asking our labor union partners, locals, and regional officers to step up and stand in solidarity with our Working Voices show by seriously considering underwriting this show. Because Working Voices and KPFK really need your support. Please contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. And of course, we need to hear from you. So you can email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com, and please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. We're in this together. This is Hal Lohr.
And I'm Marissa Remsky.
Wishing Joe Ayala a speedy return, with our thanks to Dan McCrory, Steve Zeltzer, Reggie Wong, Gary Scott, and all our guests. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a great working week, everyone.
So much work, 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 yeah, work, work.
My name's Philip, and I've been listening to KPFK for probably 40 years or so. One of my favorite programs is Background Briefing, and I'm glad he's back on air there. I heard some things that I didn't always agree with, but I like the Tom Hartman show. And I think it's a great station and really needs more support in these days when independent radio is under attack.
This is the moment where KPFK is needed most, because mainstream media's coverage is not balanced and reliable. It's expensive for KPFK to continue our fair and equal coverage, which includes broadcasting the voices of people on the ground and those speaking truth to power. If you value reliable, unfiltered news coverage, support your independent radio station today by calling 818-985-5735.